Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing the position of Ze'iri, where Ze'iri stated that Nishbara Mafreket Virov Basarima Nevela, that if the neck bone, the spinal cord is broken, and the Rov Basar is cut, that the animal is deemed to be dead immediately. It's considered to be a Nevela, that's even if it's still moving, that's even if there is more to do, the animal is deemed officially dead, it has Tumat Nevela, and you can't do anything with the Shechita to remove the fact that it is a nevela. So Rava challenged that from the issue of Malika Ta'of. By Malika Ta'of, if you're going through the back of the neck, and then you're going through the simanim, then what's the value of going through the simanim if you already made the animal into a nevela? It's one thing, as we mentioned yesterday, if you made it into a treifa, because that happens anytime you do shechita, anytime you do a malika, the tarfut happens along the way. So as long as it's in the motion of doing the shechita or the malika, we wouldn't have worried about it. But if it's already a nevela, that's an animal that's dead. Cutting through something that's already dead is obviously problematic, and that's not going to accomplish what we're looking for here, which is the malika involving the simanim. So Rava's answer to that problem, and we saw this also from Rabbi Ami, is that when you cut or do the malika, you do through the mafreket, but only you do miyuta basar. You don't do rova basar, and therefore it's only a treifa, and not a nevela, and that's how they solve or reconcile between Ze'iri and the issue of Malika that we find by the birds in the Mikdash. In addition, we also addressed as an aside, because Abaye challenged Rover from this, the issue of Olata O'uf, where you have to cut through both Simanim. How is it that the second Siman has any value if it's already done after the first Siman is cut? And that, we said again, was because there's two separate mitzvot by Olat Ta'of. One of the mitzvah is the Malika. The second mitzvah is the Havdalah, is the separating of the head from the body, which is going to become important in today's daf. So Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a braita that supports our conclusion. Ketzad Mokim, Chatat Ta'of. How do you do Malika when it comes to Chatat Ta'of? Chotech Shidra Umafreket, below Rov Basar, Achime Gila Veshet, Olekaneh. You do the Malika through the back of the neck, through the spinal cord, spinal column, below Rov Basar, without cutting through the Rov Basar, according to most means the width of the neck, not the entirety of the width of the neck over there, until you reach one of the two simanim, the Veshet or the Kaneh. Here, it's a Chatat Oaf. So like any other Oaf, you only need one siman over here. You get a Veshet or the Kaneh, Chotech Siman Echad, O Rubo. You cut that siman, or a Rov of that siman, Rov Basarimo. And then you finish off the Rova Basar then to finalize and to ensure that the bird is killed. And that's how you do Malika for Chatat Ta'of that only requires one Siman. Ube Ola, when it comes to an Ola Ta'of, Shnaim O Rov Shnaim. It's either two or the majority of two that you need to do for Ola Ta'of. Mani. Who is the author of this Braita? Irabonon Ha'amrei Shnaim Davka. If it's the Rabbonon, again, this is something that we'll get to later, but the Rabbonon tell us that when it comes to the Havdalah of Olat Ta'of, you have to cut entirely through the Shnei Simanim. Both Simanim have to be cut entirely. Nothing to do with Ruba Kukula or not. Havdalah requires you that you cut the Simanim entirely. Ikra Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, the dissenting opinion is Rabbi Elazar Ben Shimon, Amar Rov Shnaim. We just do Rov Shnaim. In Shechita, when we say Rov Shnaim, we mean at least Rov Shnaim. By Havdalah to Olat Ta'of, then it's Dafka Rov Shnaim. So, Ema, the possibility is Shnaim l'Rabbanon, Rov Shnaim l'Rablazer b'Rabbi Shimon. The Braita is just giving you all the options. It's saying not Shnaim or Rov Shnaim. It's saying depending upon whether you subscribe to the Rabbanon or you subscribe to Rablazer b'Shimon, you'll do what you need in this situation. So, for the Rabbanon, you'll do Shnaim. You'll do the two. For Rablazer b'Rabbi Shimon, you'll do Rov Shnaim. Be right, Ema. Havaha, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. The Shnaim and Rov Shnaim are both relevant to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. My Shnaim, Shedomim L'Shnaim. So then what does it mean? Two? It means similar to two. Rashi over here explains that the requirement of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon for Rov, there's two types of Rov. We always discuss this. There's a statistical Rov, which just means that you got over 50%, you have 51%. And then there's what we call Rov Mukhlat, or Rov Hanira Le'einayim. There's a majority where it's clear that you have a majority, and it's not that you have to calculate or measure it to see that it is. And that's what Rashi says, that Rov Shnaim means that statistical Rov, which means you got over 50%. Shnaim means that you have a visible Rov in the cut. Not that you have to cut either one of them completely, but one of them looks more like the cutting of Shnayim than the other one. One of them is just on the precipice of being Rov. The other one is such a Rov that it's clear that you cut through Shnayim, even though you didn't completely cut them. The Rov of both of them is cut to the point where it's visible. That would be the way to explain it, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, for both Rov Shnayim and Shnayim. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Nishpira Mafreket, Rov Basarima, if the neck is broken, and then the Rov Basar is severed along with it, Mitamei Ba'ohel. So then there's Tumat Ohel. Obviously, just given the context of what we're speaking about an individual, a human being over here, because Tumat Ohel is only relevant by human beings. So what the statement of Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying is, that this is a deemed death, and that means, as Rashi points out, afilu mifar case, even if the person is still flapping around and still shows signs of life, it doesn't matter. It's person's deemed dead at that point in time. Bim tomar, oto maaseh de'eli, mafreket below rav basar, havai. Wait a minute. What about the incident with Eli? They went out to battle with the Plishtim, and they took the Aron from Mishkan Shiloh to go to the battle. They lose the battle. The Aron is taken into captivity. Both of Eli's sons are killed in the battle. Then the messenger comes back through the city and brings the news to Eli, and Eli is sitting outside the Mishkan by the Shar, where there's the Shar Ha'ir, the Shar of the Mishkan is sitting, and he gets the news, and he's so overwhelmed by the news that he falls over backwards on the chair and he breaks his neck and then he dies. So there, all he did was break his neck. He didn't have Rov Basar. So then if you ask from Eli, how could it be that he passed away from that, just breaking the neck and not having the Rov Basar, Zikna, shiny. When it comes to elderliness, it is different, meaning that he is much weaker. The pasuk actually notes that he was 98 years old over there. Or it says, Ve'eli ben tishimush monesh shana, ve'enav kama v'lo yechol lirot. He already had reached 98 years old. His eyes were already dim and he couldn't see clearly. Since he's much weaker, then a smaller type of fracture problem could cause a more serious outcome. So we're speaking about it in a generic sense. That anybody who has the broken neck and the Rov Basar gone, they're deemed to be dead. That doesn't mean the person can't die otherwise. And here by Eli, where he was in a weak state, he's already much older. And so therefore, when he broke the neck, that was enough to push him over the precipice and have him pass away. Tichtiv.
Vayomer ha'ish el Eli, anochi haba min amaracha, v'ani min amaracha nasti ayom, vayomer mahya dvar b'ni, v'yana mevaser, vayomer nas Yisrael lifnei plishtim, v'gam magifa gdola ita ba'am, v'gam shnei vanecha meitu, chofni u'pinchas. Aron Elokim nilkecha.
Vehikas kiroet Aron Elokim. So after he got the news about the Aron Elokim, obviously an interesting pasuk because he gets news about his children. Nothing affects him as much as the fact that the Aron Elokim was taken into captivity. Vayipol me'alakisei ochoranit. He fell over backwards on the seat that he was sitting on. Ba'ad yad ha'shar, right by the gateway. Vatishaver mafrakato vayamot. Then he broke his neck and he died. Kizakein ha'ish, he was older,
v'chaved, which could mean either that the news was heavy, or that Eli himself was very heavy, or it was too much to bear for someone of his age, and therefore it was a much bigger impact for someone given his age. And that's exactly what the Gemara is pointing out, that given his advanced age, this had a disproportionate impact on him, and therefore he doesn't need the standard mafrakto v'rov basar in order to pass away. Even something of a smaller nature would have been impactful.
Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Karo kedag mitamei ba'ohel. If you tear it like a fish, then you have a din of, again, deemed nevela. And it's mitamei ba'ohel. Mitamei ba'ohel, once again, means that it has to be speaking about a human being. The Rishonim also note that it applies equally to a behema. And Rashi makes the same note, which is afilu mifarkes. Even if he's still moving, he's deemed to be dead at that point. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Yitzchak umigabo. It's not enough that you tear it, but you have to tear it from the back. And the way that the Meiri explains it is, kara migaba, you're tearing this animal or this human being from the back, ba'orech, along the length of the back of the animal or the human being, kederach shekorim dag mikreso. The way that you would tear open a fish from its belly, when you're going to scale a fish, you slice the lengthwise of the fish from the belly size of the fish. The same way you would do that, if you did that on the back of the animal or the back of an individual, then you would end up with someone who is deemed to be dead, even though they're still moving, even though they still show signs of life. Amar Shmuel, asa gistira,
nevela. If you slice it in half, then it's automatically, again, deemed to be a nevela. Rashi says, kol davar chaluk l'shnayim, anything that's split into two is hare gistira. That's considered to be a gistira. Rashi gives a number of examples. Shechotchol rochba. So instead of running along the length of the animal, like the previous statement was, this runs along the width of the animal. So if you cut it in half, obitzavra kulo, if you did it by the neck, obishidra ad achalal, or by the spinal column towards the chalal. The gist over here seemingly disagrees with the position of Ze'iri before, because over here it seems to require much more cutting than simply the mafreket and the rova basar. Gistira is a complete severing across of the animal. And Rashi mentions bitzavara at the neck. If you're cutting the neck off or you're cutting the head off, here it seems to require a higher standard to be deemed to be dead, not simply breaking the spinal column and the rova basar, but including cutting the simanim, at least similarly by the body. Rashi notes over here that if you cut through the spinal column and then get to the halal, Rashi over there doesn't seem to think you need to get all the way through. You have to just have to get into the cavity of the innards of the animal, and that'd be enough to deem it a mate. But still, that seems to be a higher standard or a higher threshold than what we saw before from Ze'iri. Although, if you look on the Balei HaTosafot, Tivrei HaMatch VeLechshov, on Lamed Bet Amud Bet, he brings two other possibilities for Gistura that do not include the severing of the spinal column. The Mishkachela Gistura de Nevela Afilu Chuta Shidra Kayam. There is a way to create a Gistura without severing the spinal column. Kagon Nekrat Tzela Mikan Umitzela Mikan. It's a case where the ribs are taken off on both sides, but the spinal column is still intact. And Rav on Daf Nun Bet calls that a gistra. Inami shasa gistra lamat mi ben apashot shelo mitrufa b'psikat chuta sidra. Or it's so far down in the animal that you're past the point where the severing of the spinal column is actually considered to be a trefa. So Tosafot suggests that the gistura can be created in such a manner where it does not sever the spinal column, and in that way it would not be a problem or a stira with Ze'iri's position over here.
We have another example, Amar Rav Elazar, Nitala Yerech v'chalal shela nevela. If the hind leg of the animal was taken off, and chalal shela, including the chalal, nevela, it's considered to be a nevela. Now, the word nikar here is questionable whether it belongs in the girsa. Some say it was added to the girsa based on Rashi's explanation, and the girsa would actually influence what you think is being said over here. Because if you say nitala yerech v'chalal shela nikar, that would be one way to read it, which means that the yerech is taken off, and then the chalal is visible. That's one way to read it. The way that we have it now, the girsa is nitala yerech v'chalal shela. The yerech is taken, and the halal is taken. So the question is, what's the meaning of halal over here? If you think that nitala yerech, this is the way Rashi explains it, is that the leg is completely taken off. The hind leg is taken off, including all the bones of the leg, all the way up to the point of the hip, and it's removed. And then Rashi says, v'chalal shela means that you can see the wound, you can see the internal part of where the leg was attached, meaning that you could see the hip bone, the socket where the hip was, and that you can is visible to you. So that's one way to read it. The Meiri, on the other hand, says that he thinks it's nitala yerech v'chalal shela, means the yerech along with its skin. The chalal doesn't refer to the innards of the animal, but chalal shela is a reference in the leg itself. You're taking off the leg v'chalal shela and the skin or the parts of the leg that go along with the bones that came out over there, but then it would not have that requirement like Rashi that you have to see the chalal. You have to literally see the inner side of it. It just means that you have to have the leg taken off, v'chalal shela, with the basar and other things that surround the leg itself. So in that case, it's in nevela. Hechidami, chalal shela. What is the chalal shela? So again, depending if you have the gears of chalal shela nikar, what does it mean that the chalal is nikar? Or does it mean, what is chalal shela? What does that mean? So Amarava kosher vutza veniret chasera. Anything that is crouched down, and therefore it's visible, the injury. So for Rashi, that means when it's crouched down, you still have the ability to see into the chalal. You see into the wound, into that area. So that's what's considered to be a nevela. For the Meiri, you don't need as much as that. Meaning that all you need is enough of the leg to be missing, that when it's crouched, you can see the fact that the leg is missing. And that's what it means, chalal shela. Chalal shela doesn't mean its internal side. It means the part of the leg that is on the bone and surrounds the bone and the skin around that socket. You have to have enough missing that it would be visible to you the fact that it was
missing the leg, but that means that there still could be stuff there. It doesn't necessarily mean you can see the socket inside. It just means that you can see that there's an injury there even when it's crouched down. And despite the fact that this is true by an animal, the Meiri suggests that it's a safek by bnei adam, by people. And the Chatam Sofer points out that it's not true by human beings, because he says that human beings have the ability to lay down, to rest, to get off, or take the weight off of those areas, whereas an animal crouches down all the time. That's a position that has weight bearing and has impact on the animal, and therefore for an animal it's deemed to be a nevela, but by a human being that would not be the case. It's not hotam. We have a Mishnah over there. Hutsu roshehem, if the heads were taken off, severed, afapish mifarkasim tameim, even though they're still flopping around, they are tamei. This is what Rashi has said all along. What is the issue of being deemed nevela? It means that even if you're showing signs of life or life force, that doesn't make a difference. The person, the animal, and here Rashi claims that we're speaking about the shmona shvatzim, all of these are deemed to be dead. And since they're deemed to be dead, it has implications, first of all, for the fact that tum'ah. Number two is shchita won't do anything anymore. Won't be mitaharet midei nevela. And third of all, it means that if you need the animal to be dead for whatever reason, for eating or for other purposes, then it's deemed to be dead at that point in time, and it's not considered, as you said, to be Eiver Min HaChai anymore. That's the way Rashi learns it. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot think that it's not just speaking about a case of a sheretz, but it includes Gabei Behema Chaya Va'of Mitnaya B'Sei Masechet Olot V'lo Gabei Shratzim K'Deper Shekuntres. That's what it says, not like Rashi says that this is a reference to the Shmona Shratzim. Rather, this is a reference to any animal. In any animal, if the head's taken off, then it's deemed to be a nevela. Kazanav halita'a shemifarkeset. And it gives the example of the fact that movement isn't always necessarily a sign of life. That when you cut off the tail of the lizard, the tail of the lizard continues to shake, to move. That's from the electric impulses that were sent before it was cut off. And it moves around, even though it's clear that the tail is not going to live. The tail is not alive anymore. It's severed from the lizard. So similarly, any animal or any individual that's making movement after any of these things happen, they're considered to be dead, even though there's movement, because the movement is not a sign of life. It's just a residual of whatever messages or electric impulses that were sent beforehand. My hutzu. What does it mean that the head is severed? Resh Lakish amar hutzu mamash. Literally, severed, cross the whole thing, taken off, separated. Rabbi Asi Amar, Rabbi Ani, Kabdalat Olat Ha'of. Similar to the severing of Olat Ha'of, which means that it doesn't have to be completely severed, means, depending on whether you hold like the Rabbanon or Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, it will tell you how much, and that's what the Gemara is about to state. Amalei Rabbi Yirmiyahu, the Rabbi Asi, Kabdalat Olat Ha'of, the Rabbanon, the Lo Pagitu. Is it like the Rabbanon that believe that you have to cut both simanim, and then basically you have the same thing? Two simanim all the way through, it's Hutzu Rosho completely. Odilmak Avdalat Olat Of, the Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Shimon, where it's only Rov of the two simanim, not the whole simanim, Upalgitu, and then he would argue on Reish Lakish's statement that Hutzu means Hutzu Mamash. Amalek Avdalat Olat Of, the Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Shimon, he answers him, it's like the Avdalat Rosh of Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Shimon, Upaliginan, and they argue. That there's a disagreement here as to how much of the head has to be severed in order for this to be deemed to be dead. Ikedamre, Rishon Lakish Amar Hutzu Mamash, literally severed. Rabbi Yassi Amar Rabbi Mani, Avdalat Olat Ha'of, LeRabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Berov Shnayim. So he states it in this case explicitly. Rabbi Mani says that he's saying that Hutzu Arosh means like Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, where you need Rov Shnayim Ba'olat Ha'of. And we're going to now then venture into what Rabbanan and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon's positions are. Tosafot makes an important comment over here. It says Hutzu Mamash, according to Reish Lakish. It says Nira de Pligi az Ziiri de Le'el. It says looks like this argues on Ziiri above. Sagilei b'mafreket b'rov basar. You just need the spinal cord and rov basar to be cut off in order for it to be meaningful or deemed a nevela. Over here you need Hutzu Mamash, and even the opinion of Rabbi Mani, where it's Hutzu means Rov Shnei Simanim, that's still much more than Ziiri requires. So the Baal HaTeil Tzafot point out that the positions here seem to disagree with Ziiri, and therefore require much deeper cuts than simply breaking of the neck bone and cutting through Rov HaBasar. That might be what compelled Rashi to explain that this was speaking about Shmona Shratzim, and not a behema chaya, an oaf, because that way it's not a stira to ze'iri. And you can explain then the difference being that shvatzim have a stronger life force and therefore they need a more significant cut in order to be deemed an avela, and in that way not end up with a stira between this sugya and that which we said in ze'iri's name before.
Alright, so now the Gemara says, my Rabbonon umay Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. You mentioned this machloket a number of times between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. What is their machloket? Tatanya, we have a Braita that quotes the pasuk from the Korban Olevi Yoreid. Remember, there are three different averot that precipitate a Korban Olevi Yoreid. That's Shvuat Bitui, Shvuat Ha'idut, and Tumat Mikdash Ukodoshav. That's the subject of Masechet Shvuot. There are different gradations of the korbanot that you can bring. The highest gradation is bringing a chatat, basically, which is a sira or kisba that you bring as a korban chatat. The next grade, if you can't afford that, is to bring shtei ofot, to bring two birds, which is one ola, one le chatat. If you can't afford that, then there's a third gradation, which is a mincha. So the Gemara is quoting the pasuk for the korban olevi oreid with regards to the birds that you're going to bring. And with the birds, it says, Im lo tagi yado desa, if you can't afford that, ve'yehi et ha'shemor shechata shtei torim u'shnei b'nei yonah. Hashem, you're going to bring two birds. Echad l'chatat ve'echad l'olah. One's in a chatat and one's in olah. Ve'vi otam l'kohen ve'kriv el'asher l'chatat rishona. It's going to bring the chatat first. U'malaket rosho. It's going to do malika. Mimul arpo. This is going to be very important in the upcoming Gemara. The location for the malika is mul arpo. That's what we already discussed. That means in the nape of the neck. That means the part of the neck that views the back of the head, the oref, which is the opposite of the face. Velo yavdil. You may not separate it. By the chatat, there's a requirement not to separate the head from the body of the chatat. Bizami dam chatat al kir mizbeach. Then you do the azat adam of the chatat. Vanishar badam yimatzeh usod mizbeach chatat hu. And then you do the mitzvah to the usod mizbeach. Now, the pasuk that we're quoting here is v'tasheni yase ola kamishpat. The next one you will do the ola kamishpat, like you know to do the ola ta'of. So now when you say bet hasheni yaseh ola kamishpat, what does it mean kamishpat? So Rashi and Chumash actually says kamishpat means like you know from the olat nidava, like you know from the beginning of Vayikra, which spoke about ola ta'of and told you how to bring an ola ta'of nidava. That's what you should do over here. The Gemara never entertains that possibility here. So Rishonim point out that it might be because it should have said kamishpato. Meaning that if it's something that was already previously referenced like that, it would be a kamishpato, like the way you would do an olat ta'of. That's the way you should do it over here. Or had it written nothing at all, that would have also worked, because then you would have assumed it's kamishpat, the olat nidava. The fact that now it goes out of its way to say kamishpat, now means you have to look for a more local reference. And in the psukim over here, there are only two references. There's either the chatat of that just came right before it. So they say kamishpat means similar to the chatat of, or kamishpat can mean like the chatat behema that was mentioned. The two birds here are coming to replace the behema, the chatat that you would have brought. So maybe kamishpat means similar to the chatat behema that you had before. That's going to precipitate their differences of opinions here in this braita. So the Gemara says that the sheni yase ola kamishpat, kamishpat chatat behema. It's similar to the din of a chatat behema. Ata umer kamishpat chatat behema, uenu ela kamishpat chatat of. Which one is it? You have two previous references in the psukim over here that it could be referencing to, which is either chatat behema or chatat of. So now this is a word that's not found here in these psukim, but rather by olat nidava. And by olat nidava, it says, v'ikrivo akohen el ha-mizbeach, umalak et rosho, v'ktir ha-mizbecha, v'nimtza damo akir ha-mizbeach. So there it says, v'ikrivo. The pasuk should have said, v'ikriv akohen el ha-mizbeach. What does it mean, v'ikrivo?
Or the Yeshita Mikubetze suggests that the entire word, v'ikrivo, is extraneous over there.
So from here, chileka katuv ben chatat of lo olat of. Therefore, we come to the conclusion that v'hikrivo means this has a din that is not true by the other korbanot. And contrasting here, it makes sense to contrast with chatat of, which is the closest thing to an olat of. It says v'hikrivo, chileka katuv ben chatat of lo olat of. So mani mekayem kamishpat. So then how do I have kamishpat? The only thing left then is kamishpat chatat habehema. It has to be similar to the chatat ha-behema.
ma chatat beima ena ba'a ela mina chulin ubayom ubiyado hayimanit. So just like a chatat beima, first of all, must come from chulim. You can't bring it from maaser sheni. When you have an obligation, anything you have an obligation to bring, you can't use someone else's money to discharge your obligation. So that means that if you have an obligation of bringing maaser sheni up to Yerushalayim, you can't use those monies of maaser sheni to discharge another obligation that you have. You have to bring it from chulin money. Similarly, on Purim, when you go to give matanot aniyim, you can't take your maaser ani or your chuvat hatzdakah and use that for the matanot evyonim. Once you've accomplished the core mitzvah, matanot evyonim, you can add on and do more with maaser ani or with ma'ot maaser. But the core mitzvah that you have an obligation to do, you can't use monies that are already designated or obligated to tzedakah, maaser ani over here, maaser sheni. You have to discharge your obligation from chulin. So here, chulin means not maaser sheni. And the Gemara will ask, how do we know that later on? Ubayom has to be done during the day. Rashi over here quotes the source for the bayom as being ki bayom hazeh yichaper aleichem. The bayom ha-kippurim, it says by the chatat there that you bring it on this day. Bayom, it has to be done during the day. And from there we learn that it must be done during the day. There is an alternative, as we'll see later, which is Bayom Tzavoto, which the Gemara quotes all the time, by the Miluim. That Bayom Tzavoto tells you on the day that you were commanded, meaning during the day there is dinim of kodoshim, you're allowed to bring korbanot. At night you're not allowed to bring korbanot. Ubiyadoa yimanit. And you have to do it with your right hand. As it says by the korban chatat behema, because it says lakach hakoyin midama chatat be'etzba'o. And we already established that imenachot. Anytime it says etzba and kuhuna, that's considered to be yamin. So those three items are learned from chatat behema, where we know that they are true by chatat behema, afolatof. Similarly, by anolatof, ena ba'a ela minechulin, ubiyom, it only can be brought during the day, ubiyado yaminit, it only can be done with your right hand. Rashi says over here, vikasha, Lamalei haitana, lameimar kamishpat, chatat beima, lukmei achatat of, desalik mine. Why is he going out of his way to establish that kamishpat means chatat beima, and not chatat of, which was the sukim that are immediately preceding it? And then you'll learn all these things from chatat of. I mean, chatat of has the same requirements of, number one, it's minachulin, bayom, ubiyado yemanit. There's nothing unique about chatat beima that is different about a chatat of that you couldn't have learned. All these three items apply both to chatat beima and chatat of. So what's the big chiddush that you're learning it out of chatat beima instead of learning it out of chatat of? So Rashi says, lav pirchahi, that's not a good question. Chatat of lo ktiva be chulin behedjo. That chulin is not mentioned by chatat of inherently. Ela yalfa mi idikrei chatat. It is learned out of the fact that it's called a chatat. And that means that the limudim of chatat of actually derive from chatat behema. It's a hekesh between chatat of and chatat behema because it's called a chatat that teach you all these dinim by chatat of. And we know that the din is when it comes to kodoshim, the mar lamed mi hekesh, eno chuzer velo meid behekesh. Something that's learned through hekesh can't also then teach through a hekesh be kodoshim. What Rashi points out is that the inability to learn from chatat of stems from the fact that all these dinim in chatat of derive from chatat behema in the first place. The fact that they derive from chatat behema means you have now a hekesh from chatat behema to chatat of. If you then had another hekesh of kamishpat from chatat of to olat of, that'd be a double hekesh that doesn't work in kodoshim. If you go to the directly to the source, which is chatat behema, then you don't have a problem because then you'll have one hekesh, which is kamishpat. Did you do that from chatat behema learn to olat of? That's why it made sense to learn these dinim from chatat behema and not from chatat of, even though chatat behema and chatat of have exactly the same dinim, and all these dinim apply to both of them. Nevertheless, the mechanism for limud could only work through chatat behema. It could not work through chatat of. Tosafot over here notes that he thinks Rashi's assumption that kamishpat is working through the derech hekesh, and therefore Rashi's question is a good question, but he does not think that the answer that Rashi gives is correct. Because the source for the fact that a chatat has to come from chulin comes from the chatat of Aaron on Yom HaKippurim. And a regular chatat behema learns from the chatat of Yom HaKippurim from a hekesh. So now you're back to square one, which is even when you're learning from chatat behema itself is learned from chatat Yom HaKippurim behekesh. And therefore it would be a double hekesh here. And in both instances, you can't learn directly from Chatat of Yom Kippurim, because as he notes, the Gemara in Shavuot indicates that there are certain chumrot associated with the Chatat of Aaron and Yom Kippurim, including the fact that it goes lifnai lifnim, so that you can't learn directly from it. You either need a hekesh or you need a limud. So in the end, the Baal Tosfot suggests that the terminology asher lo, which is the source for this, by the Chatat of Yom Kippurim, is excessive language. And through that, that's how we know that a Chatat Behema is also required to be brought min achulin, and therefore it's no longer a hekesh, it's a direct limud from the Yitura Dekra, and that's what allows us over here to learn it through a hekesh from Chatat Behema, from Kamishpat.
So now, the Gemara says, Imala halan birov shnaim, so along the lines of your question, if you're comparing it to a Chatat Behema requires rov to misimanim in order to be shechted, avkan birov shnaim. So similarly over here, you would say the same thing by the Olat Of, that it should require Rov Shnaim. Tamalomar umalak vihiktir. So now they're going back to the Sukim that we found by the Olat Nidava, where it says vihikrivo akoen al mizbech, umalak et rosho, vihiktir amizbecha, v'nimsa damo akir mizbech. So it says there that you have to do malika, and then you have to do haktara. So the Gemara says about that, ma haktarat arosh be'atzmo v'aguf ma'atzmo. Just like by haktara, it's clear that you have to put the rosh and the guf on separately onto the mizbeach, af milika. So too the milika has to be harosh be'atzmo, v'aguf be'atzmo. You have to get them separated. As opposed to the behemah, or the chatat behemah, where rov is enough, rov shnaim is enough, over here, there's a requirement for severing the head completely. And that's learned from the fact that when it comes to olat ha'of, you have to put the head on the mizbeach separate from the body. And just like the haktara is put on in separate ways, the malika has to generate that separation. And that's from the hekesh between malak vihiktir, that just like the haktara is separate, so to the malika means a severing of the rosh completely.
And as Rashi points out, the drasha is precipitated by the pasuk being out of order. It says vikriveh akoin al mizbech umalak et rosho, which would be the first stage. Then it says vikdir amizbecha, that you're going to place it on the mizbech. Then after that it says v'nimtza damo akir mizbech, that you're going to press the blood onto the wall of the mizbech. Well, but it's already huktar ala mizbeach. How are you doing the mitzui adam after the haktara? So the placement of the haktara juxtaposed to the malika is what generates this limud, that whatever is true of the haktara is also going to be true of the malika.
Now, how do you know that you have to put the rosh on separately from the body on the mizbeach? That's precipitated by a pasuk later on, which says that shisa oto biknafav lo yabdil v'yiktir oto akohen amizbecha leitzim ashalesh ulahu yishiriach nichoach l'ashem,
which is a reference to the haktarat haguf.
So there it says v'yiktir. How come you have another hiktir in the psukim by the Olah? So there are two words hiktir that appear. Those two words of hiktir come to teach you that there are two separate haktarot. One haktara for the rosh and one haktara for the body itself. So from the fact that we know that there are separate haktarot for the rosh and the body, that then teaches us that the malika also has to generate that type of separation of the severing of the head from the body itself.
Rashi says it doesn't literally mean that you have to sever it completely, but it says, "Vafilu mechubar ba'or havdala chashiva." Even if it's still hanging on by the skin, which does not need to be cut, that's still considered to be a havdala, and that's enough of a separation. He bases it on the gemara that we saw yesterday, that the requirement for Havdalah is only places that are ma'akev the shechita. And since the or is not ma'akev, the or can still be attached and it'll still be deemed as a Havdalah. But if you look in the Rambam says that Havdalah here means complete severing or separation of the head, and the head has to be completely separated away from the body of the Olat Ha'of.
That's the view of the Chachamim, the Rabbonon, where they said you need a full Shnayim in order to have Malika be completed by Olat Ha'of. Now we have a second opinion, which is Rabbi Shmuel Omer. Kamishpat. Kamishpat chatat of. He disagrees and says Kamishpat is not a reference to chatat beima, rather to the chatat of that came just before it. Ma chatat of mimul oref, afulat of mul oref. Just like the chatat of has a recurrent mul oref, which is I read to you in the psukim over there, which is malakato shom mimul arpo velo yavdio, so too the olat of requires it to be done in the same location in the mul oref. Imala halan molek ve'enu mavdil. The pasuk then says right afterwards, mimula po velo yavdil. Do not separate the head of the chatat. So, imala halan molek ve'enu mavdil v'siman echad.
So there, you do malika and don't separate it, and it's enough to do it one siman. Avkan molek veinu mavdil v'siman echad. So tu bareot alot ta'of, maybe you should also only have to do malika to the point where you don't separate the head, and you only have to do one siman. Tamalomar v'hikrivo. That's the purpose of hikrivo, to tell you that the olat ta'of is different than the chatat ta'of. Rashi questions over here, according to Rabbi Yishmael, why is it that we learn from Behikrivo the distinction between Chatat Ta'of and Olat Ta'of is whether you have Siman Echad or two Simanim? And from Kamishpat, we learn that it's done Mul Arpo. Why don't you say just the opposite, that you don't need Mul Arpo by the Olat Ta'of, but you do need Siman Echad and Lo Yavdil will be applicable? How did he know which way to go with the Riboy versus the Miut? And therefore, Rashi says over here that even Rabbi Shmuel subscribes to this Malak Vihiktir of the Rabbanon. And therefore he says, Malak Vihiktir, Mabak Tara Rosh, Levad Vaguf Levad, Af Malika Rosh, Levad Vaguf Levad. It's not enough with the word Vihikrivo to teach you that there's that distinction that exists. You need some sort of indication as to what the distinction is. So you have Vihikrivo, that Vihikrivo comes to teach you that there is a difference between Olat Ta'of and Chatat Ta'of. What the difference is? Rashi says that's governed by Umalak Viktir, the same way that the Rabbanon learned it. The Bali Tosafot don't love that explanation, and they think that it is Misvara Ba'alma, Itle the Rabbi Shmuel, Delamula Orif Akshino. Position is dictated by a logic and not by necessarily the Psukim of Malak Viktir, because they don't mention that at all. And he says, how do you know that? Is because both the Tanakama and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon never bring an explicit pasuk for mul oref, but they learn it from a mem atzino, and therefore it seems to be something that's a given, or the more logical, easier way to go in terms of a riboy. And the Ramban goes on to explain that if you're going to look at what to keep and what not to keep, and you have one pasuk telling you that it's like chatat ta'of, and you have another pasuk telling you it's not like chatat ta'of, so it makes sense to keep the items that are integral to the melika and to the things that are mifurash by the psukim. Those are things that make sense to keep, meaning like mul arpo. On the other hand, when you're dealing with issues like lo yav deal, that's something that's unique. That's something we never heard before about the birds, and that you could say vihikrivo comes to undermine that position. Rashi claims that Rabbi Shmuel also learns out all the dinim of chulin, ubayom, ubayado yamanit from the Hekesh of Zot HaTorah. And the reason the Rabbanon didn't do it that way from the Hekesh of Zot HaTorah is a fundamental difference in their view as to what Zot HaTorah can impact. And that is, as Rashi says over here, Zot HaTorah, according to the Chachamim, can only be used for Behemot, not for Ofot. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel believes it has application not only for Behemot, but also for Ofot. And therefore, he can use the Hekesh to get him this information, something that the Tanakama, who believes you can only use it for Behemot, couldn't do. Tosafot does not like that explanation of Rashi. He shows that the Ofot are included in that Hekesh. And rather, he says that the Machloket between them is whether you have the capacity to learn that din, that you can only bring something from the Chulin, whether Zot HaTorah is able to be the Hekesh to be used in that case. And that's because Tosafot claims you can only use Zot HaTorah when all the Korbanot that are found in the Hekesh have the same din. Over here, this din is only applicable by Korbanei Chovah, not by Korbanei Nidavah. And therefore, the Tanakama says you can't learn it from Zot HaTorah. Whereas, Rabbi Shmuel will say, Gamrina Nekesha the Chulin, came into Mikom Makom, Kol HaKorbanot Chovah, Oneder Atu Michulin. Anything that's subsumed in this category will have the same din. So yeah, there are some Korbanot that don't have this din because they're not in the same category, but nevertheless, any Korban that is relevant to it does require it. And therefore, you can use that case of Zot HaTorah to teach you that information. Seemingly, there is no nafka mina between the Rabbanon and Rabbi Yishmael. They're just, their method of learning is different, but they all come to the same conclusion, which is that Chulin, Yom, Yamin are all relevant over here. The din of the Olat Ta'of is different than the Chatat Ta'of, and you require that you cut the full two simanim, and not like the Chatat Ta'of, or not like the Chatat Behema. So that's the source of Rabbi Yishmael's position. And then we have the third position, which is what we're searching for, the argument between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kamishpat. Kamishpat Chatat Ta'of. He agrees with Rabbi Yishmael that it's a reference to Chatat Ta'of. Malahalan, Ochez Berosho, Ubaguf, Umazeh. Avkan Ochez Berosh, Uguf, Umazeh. What's the point of having a Hekesh between Chatat Ta'of and Olat Ta'of? That's to teach you that the way that you put the dam on the Mizbeach is similar for the Chatat Ta'of and the Olat Ta'of. Then in both cases, you hold on to the body and the head. So it's over here, you hold on to the body and the head. Maika amar. What does that mean? Meaning that it sounds like here that you have to have both the head and the goof in the hand while you're doing the hazat adam, which arises from the pasuk of Hizabi dam hachatat, that we do the hazat directly from the chatat ha'of and not through a kli. But still, where in the psukim do you see any indication that it has to be both items that are in the palm of your hand? There is no such source for that. Ella chachi kamar ma'ala halan kshuch achuz harosh baguf mazeh avkan kshuch achuz harosh baguf mazeh. That's exactly what he's teaching you, is that when you're holding on to the bird, that both the bird and the head are together. They are still attached, that the achuz harosh baguf, that the head is still attached to the goof, and that's learned out from the pasuk called velo yavdil, that we do have a source for, and just like by the chatat ha'of, there's a requirement of lo yavdil, so too, by the case of the olat ha'of, there will be a requirement of lo yavdil. Now, Tosfos will point out from here, it's clear that he believes that the word lo yavdil is an imperative, that you may not separate the head from the body, and not just an option to say that lo yavdil, you don't have to separate it out. Now that goes against the Gemara in Zvachim and Daf Samachay Amud Bet, where we learned that the lo yavdil means that you have the option not to do Havdalah. There's no necessity for Havdalah in that instance. So how do we reconcile between those two? So the Baal Yatosfo suggests that that's unique shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim in the Gemara in Zvachim, but it's not the view of all the other Amoraim with regards to lo yavdil. Well, the Rabbeinu Tam gives an explanation which the Baal Yatosfo say is dochak. They ask a number of questions on it that seem to undermine it. The Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the lo yavdil actually is read in two different ways. There's one lo yavdil, which means it's asur lahavdil. There's an imperative, and that's before you do the hazayat adam. On the other hand, after hazayat adam by the chatat of, you have to also do mitzui adam. And in the process of mitzui adam over there, the lo yavdil is not an imperative, but optional. You don't have to separate it. But if you do separate it, then it'd be okay with regards to Mitsui Adam. Although the Ramban just avoids the whole problem by explaining that Achuz HaRosh Baguf means optionally and not imperatively, although it does make it a little harder with the continuation of the Gemara. Im Alalan B'Siman Echad, Afkan B'Siman Echad. Alright, so take this to its logical conclusion. Then, if there you require only a Siman Echad by Chatat Ov, so too over here you only require a Siman Echad. Tamalomar V'Hikrivo. So V'Hikrivo comes to teach you that there's a distinction between the Chatat Ha'of and the Olat Ha'of, and that distinction is not the fact that the head and the body are attached, but that it's not enough to do Siman Echad. The Kamishpat would be a mitigating force that would say that you can't be Mavdil, and so therefore you would only do Rosh Shtayim and not complete Shtayim, because you're still trying to uphold the Kamishpat, which teaches you V'lo Yavdil, not to sever the head completely. For Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, he learns out the fact that, number one, the head is still attached to the body, as opposed to the previous two positions where their head is severed from the body. And again, the Chachamim say it explicitly, Umalach Viktir. Rabbi Shmuel is implicit in his position. Rashi believes, and the Tosafot, for different reasons, believe that there's also a severing of the head from the body. But those positions are differentiated from Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who says here that the head is still attached to the body. And in the head being attached to the body, that's the indication that he needs Rosh Shnayim and not the severing, complete severing of the head. And that's what my Rabban, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. What's the argument between them is how much of the head of the Olat Ha'of you need to take off in the process of Melika. Rashi over here notes that by the Chatat Ha'of you can only do one Siman because the Pasuk says Lo Yavdil. Don't separate it. So you have a tension. You have to do Melika. But on the other hand, you have Lo Yavdil. So then how do you deal with that? Tosafot especially challenges that from the fact that later on in the Masechta we're going to see that lechatchila for a bird, even though you can do it one siman, it's still better to do two simanim. So then why over here are you limited to one siman if really min haTorah you really should be doing two simanim by a bird? So Rashi doesn't seem to address that, but it might be addressed by Rashi later on Daf Chav Zayin, where Rashi says that the lechatchila to do a bird with two simanim is only a din derabbanan, not a din d'oraita. Once you do that, it solves all your problems because the additional siman is only mid derabbanan. When you have a mitigating force like lo yavdil, then you're not going to do more than that is necessary. So in a case where there's no lo yavdil, okay, the rabbanan say go on and do two simanim. But in a case where you have something that's mitigating that, saying lo yavdil, we're not going to tell you to go beyond the first siman because then you're coming up against the lo yavdil. So that's the way that Rashi deals with it. Baal Yatosafot, in challenging that, ask about the fact that if you really do require two simanim, then how do you learn this out from lo yabdil? How do you know that you only have to do a siman echad? So in the end, the Balei Tosafot just say, since bidiavad, a single siman is sufficient, with the mitigating force of lo yabdil, we're going to opt to do it in the manner that's bidiavad of one siman in order to be mikayim lo yabdil, rather than doing lechatchila and doing two simanim and abrogating the din of lo yabdil. All right, we're going to stop here. 6 lines down on the top of Chaf Bet Amud Aleph.